This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Adam Barrowley with you here on a Thursday morning for All Natural. Now I'm joined in the studio by Richard Potter. Richard Potter is in to talk to us this morning about sustainable houses. It's something I've become fascinated with recently, and you may be hearing more about it. Now if you're looking at possibly renovating your house or building a new one, then this is definitely something you'd want to listen to, because it's basically, from what I've read, you can actually get rid of all your power bills, all your water bills, and a lot more. Richard, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Adam.
Now, let's start off by, can you tell me, what is sustainable housing?
Look, sustainable housing is the idea that you build a house not in the more traditional, conventional way, but to build it with the idea of minimising, and I'd rather use the word minimise rather than getting rid of all power bills, etc., minimising your environmental footprint, if you like, on the planet by having a house that works. It doesn't fight the elements, it uses the elements to do what you'd like to do at a minimum cost to you.
Now, why do you think in these days and times it's especially important for people to be looking at sustainable housing?
Well, clearly, unless people have been living under a rock, they are concerned these days about climate change. And we're all concerned about the effect that our traditional power plants have on the environment, because particularly here in Victoria, we're heavily reliant on coal and brown coal, and it's responsible for more than 50% of our carbon dioxide emissions. From that point of view alone, people want to reduce their environmental footprint, and clearly this is one way of doing it.
And what you've actually done is you've bought a block of land and you've built a house from scratch?
That's correct. I've been sort of in the renewable energy industry for many, many years, and have felt over that time, look, it's time to put my money where my mouth is, show people what can be done with a house that works, that does not look weird, strange, or built from unusual materials, but putting the building blocks together well in a way that it substantially reduces the outgoings utility-wise for that house into the future.
And you touched on a really important point that I noticed, because I did a bit of research over the last few days, and I've been looking at sustainable houses and thinking, oh, if you want a sustainable house, you're going to have to build it out of straw and it's going to look like a hippie house in the middle of nowhere. But I'm looking at pictures of your house, and we'll actually pop them on the All Natural blog, which you can find at joy.org.au later on today. Your house looks pretty normal, doesn't it?
That's correct. And particularly from the street, it looks like a normal but modern house. When you perhaps look around from the side, you go, boy, there are a lot more glass windows on that side of the house, aren't there, than the conventional house, and that's because it's one of the design features. But substantially, yes, it's an ordinary house, ordinary materials.
And you took some time deciding where you were going to build the place. You had to select a certain kind of block, is that right?
Well, not a certain type of block, but a block that allowed the sunshine in from the north into where the house would be. So clearly, if you have a block or are looking at a block that has a three-story set of flats just to the north, look elsewhere.
You're going to have a problem getting some sunshine on your house, aren't you? Mm. Now, Australia's got a rather diverse climate all, you know, if we come, Melbourne has schizophrenic weather, as I say, down here, and it's, you know, three different, we get rain, sun, and wind, and all in one day. It's quite hot up the north of Australia. Is sustainable housing doable anywhere in Australia?
Absolutely, and it's doable anywhere in the world. It's just the rules of the game change slightly. So you wouldn't build a house in Queensland exactly the same as we would build it here in Victoria, because here in Victoria our problem is keeping the house warm substantially, and therefore we try and let the sun in. In Queensland it's letting the heat out.
Gotcha.
And so we open it up like a big open rafter and just let the breeze flow through. So you've all heard of the Queenslander. That's a classic house where you just let the breeze go through.
Yes, got you. And we're going to actually have a chat about some of the actual features of your house and how people could maybe possibly, if they're building, implement them with ease in just a few moments' time. But right now we're going to have a bit of Lady Gaga. Let's dance. You're on Joy 94.9. Adam Barrowley joined by Richard Potter talking about sustainable houses.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Oh, they're in big trouble because they had to say it twice. It's the Potbellies and Trouble Trouble here on Joy 94.9. Adam Barrowley with you here. It is 25 minutes to 10 o'clock. I'm joined in the studio at the moment by Richard Potter. We're talking about sustainable houses. And basically, Richard built one, didn't you?
That's right. We moved in, three years ago now.
Now, Melbourne's renowned for having... Summer gets pretty hot. We can get up to 40 degrees. And I know at the moment, especially this morning, it can get very cold in Melbourne. How do you go keeping warm? Do you struggle in the extremities of heat, or what have you done?
Look, again, if you basically build correctly, you can avoid most of the extremes. Your house won't vary in temperature nearly as much as a normal house. And there are, you know, a few basic building block ideas that you'd use to achieve that.
Okay, so let's have a look at a few of them. What would be one of the major ones, you'd
say? Look, one of the major ones would be to orient the house correctly so that you can let the sun in during winter for warmth. But also, most importantly, also is to exclude it in summer. And what that means is incorporate eaves on your north side, have as much glazing on the north side as you can practically, but also minimise the amount of glazing glass, if you like, on the west side so that you don't get that hot westerly sun which bakes here in Victoria.
Got you.
To warm up the house.
Now, when you're saying glazing, can you just define that for the listener as well?
Sorry, glazing just means windows.
Okay, so you want to have as many windows as you can on the north.
Yes.
And not too many on the west. Is
that correct?
Correct. Got you. Now, what does it matter what you build your walls out of?
Yes, it is. It does. Your external walls, you want to have thermally lightweight materials. What do I mean by that? A weatherboard is a lightweight material. When the sun beats on it, it doesn't take up the heat.
Mm-hmm.
A heavyweight material for the outside is brick.
Gotcha.
As we all know, you can fire an egg on a brick wall, westerly wall in summer. So we used a material called Hebel, which is a aerated concrete. You could use styrofoam. There are a number of products on the market now which are light thermally. When the sun bakes on them, it doesn't take up the heat, therefore it doesn't transfer into the house.
Okay, got you. What about roofing?
Roofing is variable. I prefer Colorbond to tile for much the same reason as I don't like brick on the outside. Tile will take up heat and spend the rest of the night re-radiating back into your roof cavity and down to you as occupants.
Got you. I'm guessing that because you're going to be trying to not use air conditioners and heaters as much, you'd obviously need a good source of insulation as well?
Absolutely. As well as the lightweight material on the outside and what we call thermal mass on the inside, which we'll talk about, you do want to wrap the house in insulation so that any heat you have inside the building stays there. And that means not only good insulation in the walls, but it means double glazing your windows. In other words, two panes of glass with an air gap in there to prevent that transfer of heat across your window space, particularly when you've got such large windows to the north.
So tell me a little bit, why do you need a gap in between the windows?
It gives you a thermal break, as it's called, between the cold air on the outside on that pane of glass and the warm air of your house on the inside. If you have a continuous material, the heat will just conduct through it.
Okay, got you. Now, everyone may not be able to take out their windows and that kind of thing, but people may want to do something. One thing I've learned is that you should have your curtains your blinds a certain distance away from the glass, because glass is actually a poor insulator, but air is more efficient. Is that right?
That's correct. You want to have a bit of a break between your curtains, if you've got that, and a single pane of glass, in order to have an air gap.
Got you.
Because air, provided it's not moving, is a very good insulator. So if you are going to have curtains as your insulation, if you like, from glass, you must have pelmets over the top. That's that board that stops the air, if you like, rising up between the curtains and the window area and sucking cold air in from the bottom.
Because you'd basically be getting a cycle around your curtains,
That's correct.
So the pelmet would stop that. So do you know about what distance, if someone's looking at putting new curtains in their house or new blinds?
I'm not an expert on that. You could probably Google it and find out. But I'd say talk to your curtain supplier. But if I was guessing, I'd imagine it would be 4 to 6 inches.
Got you. But you don't want them too close and you don't want them too far.
Correct.
You want to basically have enough room for air to get in there, but not enough room for air to be able to circulate in there as well.
Correct.
Now, you've been talking about thermal mass. Explain that to me.
Okay, thermal mass is an idea. Inside the house, you want the temperature to stay as stable as possible.
Yep.
We used heavy building materials inside the house. What do I really mean by that? I build on a slab so that the house is locked into the ground temperature, which stays at around 15, 16 degrees most of the year. We've also got a couple of internal solid brick walls. And you go, oh, that's a bit weird.
Mm.
Well, it sounds weird, but once they're rendered, they look like a normal wall. Of course, if you ran into them, you'd know otherwise.
Yes.
But again, all that's about maintaining the temperature inside. Bricks and slabs do not like changing their temperature. And so as the outside temperature varies greatly, the inside will vary very little by comparison.
Got you. And the floor, you've got the... You've got the cement floor.
We've got a slab floor with tiles on top. Now, that's through the living and kitchen and meals area. In the bedrooms, we've got carpet just for comfort. But if you carpet everywhere, you're basically covering up that slab, insulating it, and you're losing some of the value of using that as a heat source in winter and a heat sink in summer.
Okay. So as opposed to, like, the main three floor coverings would be carpet, tiles, and floorboards, I would assume. Which ones would be the best insulators?
Okay. In terms of insulators, it would be carpet and floorboards.
Yes.
In terms of getting thermal mass properties out of your slab, you've got to cover them with tiles. Anything else, you're wasting your time.
Okay. A lot of the houses I've seen that were built to be sustainable seem to be taken off the ground, I noticed. Is there a reason for that?
Again, depends where you are. Here in Victoria, you'd actually put it and lock it to a slab.
Got you.
In Queensland, for sure. Up off the ground, again, for that airflow, under the house, everywhere. Most of the other ones which would be off the ground are more because they're perhaps into a slope of a hill and they have no choice.
Okay, got you. So we want to have them on the ground basically because it's colder here.
That's correct. And the earth is staying at 15, 16 degrees, and that becomes a locked-in temperature to start from. So any heating we have to do in our house, if you think about it, is from about 16 degrees up,
okay. Relatively
little.
So how often do you need to, like you told me, you do have an air conditioner in there, but you rarely use it. How often do you need to use it, do you think?
Okay, if we're using it for cooling, mm-hmm. probably once or twice in summer for a couple of hours, and that's after 3 or 4 days of 35 degrees plus,
would
we ever turn it on in downstairs area.
So when other people have got their air conditioner cranking for 5 days straight because it's been 35 degrees, you've got it on for a couple of hours.
Correct, and that really is the testament to how well the thermal mass works inside.
Yes.
In terms of winter, winter's a different prospect. Again, if you're prepared to live in 16-degree temperature, you wouldn't turn on heating at all because the house basically sits at that. But, yes, we use it for a little bit of heating during the winter months, early in the morning, taking the chill off the air. But also in winter, if the sun is shining on a sunny winter day, you actually don't need much auxiliary heating at all.
Wow. Now, one thing I cannot live without is a hot shower. And we're going to come back in just a few moments' time, and you're going to tell me if you ever go without a hot shower.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Adam Barrowley with you here for All Natural. I'm joined in the studio by Richard Potter. Richard has built a sustainable house, and we're talking about all the different features of it at the moment. Now, one thing I'm worried about, Richard, is I love a hot shower. Do you ever go without a hot shower?
No, we don't, Adam. Basically, what we have is a solar hot water system that does all the work, basically, for 6 months of the year. As long as the sun's shining from now through to about the end of April, it does 99% of the work. In winter, for sure, we can't rely on the sun, so we have a backup system, mm-hmm. which in our case is gas.
Yep.
We have an instant gas burner, which means we don't go without hot water. In summer, I do turn the gas off. I get growled at by my wife in this case, because if I've left the gas off and it's cloudy for 3 days, we might run out of the solar, in which case, yes, the gas must be on.
Got you. But for most houses, they would rely on their gas all throughout the year.
Absolutely. So we've got remarkable savings on our gas.
I bet. Now, for someone, once again, may not be building a house, can't start from scratch and actually get solar power, how much does it cost to convert from onto solar power?
Okay, solar power is a bit different to solar hot water. We're talking now about solar electricity.
Okay, yep.
And that is offsetting what you'd normally buy from the power grid. And
yes,
that's what our company, because I'm involved in this industry, has been doing for many, many years. So at Solar Charge, what we do is we provide a service where you offset part of your electricity costs by having solar panels on your roof and running that into your switchboard. Out-of-pocket cost at the moment is subsidised quite nicely by the government. It is a means-tested rebate, but can cost you anything from, you know, $5,500 up to $15,000, depending the size of the system.
So that would be your initial outlay, and then the government would give you some money back?
No, that's after the government
rebate.
Yeah, so if you add approximately $8,000 to $9,000 on top of that, would be the real cost if you don't get a rebate.
Now, one of the interesting things that you've been telling me about is that you can actually put power back into the power grid, and the government's actually going to be giving you money.
Well, it's not the government, it's actually the power company.
Oh, the power company, sorry.
Correct. So what happens is, if you're producing more on your roof in electricity than you're consuming in that house at the time, simply your electricity meter in theory runs backwards. In reality, the old disc meters, which most of us have, do run backwards. But what happens now is they put a digital meter in, which allows the power company to record exactly what you send out into the power grid. Currently, you get about one for one. So if you're paying 15, 16 cents, you'll be credited 15, 16 cents. Come early next year, that's when it's really going to get exciting.
Because I basically believe they're going to be giving you maybe about 60 cents, is it?
Yes, this is a model called a feed-in tariff, which is based on a model in Germany and Europe, where they are giving an incentive for exporting green power from your house, and they're going to be paying 60 cents. So currently that's 4 to 1. Clearly, as power prices go up, the 60 cent level won't go up. But that's a commitment that the state government gave in their last budget and is due to come online early in 2009. Very exciting for the industry.
That is very exciting. And I've also actually heard of some sustainable houses actually cut themselves fully off the grid.
Yeah, even at Solar Charge, we have three or four customers that think they'd like to be independent of the power. But in reality, in winter, you still need some power, because the sun doesn't shine well in winter.
Yes.
So they will still be buying in winter, but they may well be exporting excess in summer. Up in country areas, for sure, you can be independent of the grid if you don't have the mains power on, but then you typically also have a generator as a backup.
Now, you're putting power back into the grid. You're not using as much electricity. I'm guessing you're probably not using a lot of the other resources as well. So I'm guessing you take advantage of rainwater?
Yes, yes. We've got rainwater tanks on our house that collect off our roof. Currently, we've got 8,000 litres of rainwater tanks, which, when we designed the house, was said to be sufficient to do all our... We're not just plumbed to our toilets, we're plumbed to everything in the house,
yep,
with the exception of the drinking taps. Unfortunately, we're not getting average Melbourne rainfall, therefore 8,000 litres is not sufficient storage because it doesn't rain often enough.
Gotcha.
So we're about to put increased capacity in that area.
Whereabouts do they sit around the house?
Our rainwater tanks currently sit around the back, mm-hmm, in a utility sort of an area. The new bigger tank will probably sit in the corner of the yard and eventually be screened by our fruit trees, which are growing at the moment.
Now, you said that they don't supply your drinking water, is that right?
That's correct. And that's basically a decision we made. We're not confident that the rain that falls here in Melbourne, with all the pollution content that will be in that, would be suitable for drinking. I think with correct filtering you certainly could, and there are people who do it, but we weren't of that mindset without sufficient testing.
So you're saving your money on your electricity, you're saving money on water. I'm guessing your utility bills must be a lot cheaper.
That's correct. Look, we analysed it in our first year of having moved in, and for our electricity costs, our gas costs, our water costs, and our sewage charges, including connection charges to the property, which you cannot avoid, mm-hmm, for the year was about $1,100.
Wow.
Now, that's, I think, probably around a quarter what most people would be paying.
So if you think about all that money you're saving, that's probably a nice holiday or something every 1 or 2 years.
Absolutely. That's what we're focused on.
That sounds very good. Have you been on a nice holiday yet?
We're looking forward to one.
Beautiful.
But working great. Too hard at the moment.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? You've got to find the free time as well as the money.
Exactly.
Okay, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about what people can start doing to their houses, maybe if they're not building from scratch, but there may be people listening going, I'd really like to do something to cut down my bills and different things like that. We'll have a chat about that in just a few moments' time.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
And I'm joined in the studio by Richard Potter. We've been talking about sustainable housing. Now, Richard, not everyone's going to be building a house next week, but I'm sure there's things that different people can do, depending on what they're doing with their house at the moment. What if no one, they're not building, they're not renovating? Anything small that people can
do? Sure. Look, everybody should be looking at compact fluorescent lights, replacing those lights that are perhaps on for more than a couple of hours a day. Make a program to go and replace all of those in the next 6 months. And you'll say, oh, yes, they're expensive up front. They save you a bucket load of money. But do buy the quality ones because the cheap ones won't last. They just haven't got the right electronics in them.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but I've heard if you're in and out of a room, turning a fluorescent light on and off actually requires more power than just leaving it on. Is that correct or not?
That was particularly true of the old tubes where they had starters and so on. I would agree in that in our bathroom areas where we're just in and out, we'll have just ordinary globes.
Got you.
But anything where you tend to leave the light on, for heaven's sake, make it a fluorescent light.
Got you. Also, we touched on it before, getting pelmets over the curtains.
Pelmets over curtains is a good idea. Just shading your house is a good idea, keeping the sun off the house in summer.
So especially the western windows.
Particularly the western windows. So grow a tree, grow a grapevine, grow anything that stops that westerly sun hitting your house at all.
Got you. Now, if they're renovating.
If you're renovating, for heaven's sake, again, look at the options you've got to let the sun in winter, but exclude it in summer, and do a good job of insulating. Insulate wherever you can.
And one of the easiest things to do, and your company, which you can find all about at solarcharge.com.au, and we'll pop that on the blog later as well. Solar hot water and solar electricity is the easiest thing to do.
As add-ons, they're very easy to facilitate. We've found over the years a number of gay people are getting into this idea because they find they're the people, in my opinion, who do a lot of thinking about the environment and trying to get the right mix in their lives in terms of environmental footprints, and therefore they're becoming a strong part of our customer base.
Wow, so you're actually saying the gay community is actually getting behind the sustainable housing a bit more and...
Perhaps, look, they probably have a little more disposable income because they probably don't have little rugrats running around sucking up all their... income.
So, in summary, Richard, obviously sustainable housing is very important because of the welfare of our environment and what's happening in the world at the moment. And as you said at the start of the interview, you'd have to be living under a rock to know that we do have problems in that area. Does the money you outlay at the initial start, in the end, you recoup anyway?
Absolutely. And it's the payback time, as it's called, is becoming shorter and shorter with A, the cost of utilities going up, B, the prices of systems coming down, and overall the cost of carbon in the future will be quite high. So you get renewable energy credits for anything you do along these lines.
And I guess more and more companies are also investing in it. We were talking a little bit about BP is getting right behind, actually.
That's correct, because
renewable energy.
BP have a subsidiary called BP Solar. We provide their Australian-made panels. They're the only ones that are made here in Australia, properly backed up, a good quality panel. British Petroleum are trying to turn themselves into beyond petroleum. They're trying to see forward into wind power, into solar power, into the future.
Which is great to see. Richard, thank you very much for coming in and talking about your house today. Now, I know the government said they have a standard that you must build to 5 stars. I believe your house is 8 stars?
Yeah, it's more than 8 stars. It's off the Richter scale as far as their scale is concerned. We're very proud of that, but I would encourage government and everybody to be building well in advance of 5 stars because 5 stars isn't that hard to achieve. We should be aiming a little higher.
Now, you've had your house open before, is that correct?
Yes, we open it once a year on Sustainable House Day. You can Google that and you'll probably get some information on our house from the previous Solar House Day or Sustainable House Day. And a number of houses around Australia are open that have sustainable features.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for coming in and having a chat to us today. I've learned a lot, and I can still have a hot shower, so I'm relieved.
Thanks, Adam.
You've been on All Natural with Adam Barillet.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.